I feel like starting to record is like the moment before a penalty kick, and it's better to take a breath and relax for a sec. Episode 3, a conversation with U.S. men's national team head coach Greg Berhalter, reviewing the Gold Cup victory and looking ahead to World Cup qualifying. I am Bobby Warshaw, and with us now, Greg Berhalter. What's up, Greg?
Everything's great, yeah. I had a week off last week, got to visit my parents in Long Island, see family. That was great. And now I'm back, ready to go.
We have a lot to talk about. There's a lot going on for you. So yeah. Between the two chances for a trophy this summer, Nations League and Gold Cup, both of which you've won, you had a really intense few months. So I just want to know, how are you personally feeling?
Feeling good. You know, the whole idea was to prepare the team for World Cup qualifying. That was the whole idea. And, you know, going into World Cup qualifying, you know, that's a big task. And you know, you have 5 intense windows stretched across 6 months. And, you know, I feel like the group is prepared. And that's the most important thing is, you know, when as a coach, you feel like the team's prepared, is then you have a confident feeling.
What are you doing right now to make sure that lasts through the end of qualifying? And what parts of your day and your life help you keep those energy levels up right now?
It's everything, you know, it's planning the roster, scouting the opponents, thinking about the messaging, thinking about, the goal setting, you know, all those things, you know, it's, you know, we're in the planning stages for qualifying, and that's exciting, you know, because when I took over the team at the end of 2018, you know, it was all geared towards this moment. Right, getting back to qualifying and you know, positioning the team to make the World Cup again.
So I know that you are very intense about this team, but what do you do to unwind during these intense patches? What is your non-soccer time like?
Yeah, so I mentioned a little bit about going to see family out in Long Island. Spent a lot of time with friends and family. Went to the beach, played golf, had some nice dinners, drank some wine, and just really unwound. And, you know, we needed that period after the Gold Cup. It was a really intense month together. And, you know, it was just great. Great to be a family and great to be in a nice setting.
What show is the Berhalter family watching right now?
Oh, man. What show? It's weird because we're just out of camp. And we haven't picked up on a routine yet, so we're not into a show. You have any good recommendations?
So many. Such a good time for TV.
Come
right
on,
now.
Give me a couple. Give me a couple.
We just finished The Mayor of Easttown. Classic.
I heard that's great.
Of course, I'm going to watch the show about the life in Philadelphia. So mm-hmm. that was our recent recommendation.
Okay.
And then it's fun. Good. Do you know anything about F1?
No.
The Netflix show about F1 is fun because the way they tell the story of a competition is something I suspect you would enjoy.
I heard it's really detailed.
It is.
Yeah.
So looking at the team more broadly, how are you feeling about the state of the program and the team right now?
Well, you know, I guess we had a lot of questions answered over these last couple months. And you know, when you bring in guys that have no international experience, you know, and you ask them to respond in a tournament setting, you learn a lot about the players. And so for us, you know, you don't want to learn that in qualifying. You want to have an opportunity to do it beforehand. So for guys who hadn't been around the team that much, you know, we learned a lot. You know, guys like Buzio and Hoppy and Matt Turner and James Sands and Shaq Moore and, you know, I can go on, Eric Williamson, I can go on and on. But that was really helpful for the group to learn about these guys.
I want to talk about really all of those players as we move forward. But in our first episode, Greg, I asked you how you would define success and really how the fan base listening would define success. And you said, plain out, it's about winning. That fans don't care about how we build, about how we defend. They need and they want us to win. I know you well enough to know that that was a really good and the right answer to give, but it might not have been the most honest answer for you because of the performances and the whole part about it. So now that we're looking in the rearview mirror at Nations League and Gold Cup, what grade do you give for those two competitions heading into World Cup qualifying?
So I just think it's, you know, you have to look at them separately. And I think for the Nations League, it was about, you know, the specific plan to mimic what a qualifying window would look like. And, you know, we have to really take into account that we flew over from Switzerland on Monday to play on Thursday in a must-win game. And then we had to play in a final on Sunday after very little recovery, and we're playing at altitude. And you know, so when you talk about a response, when you talk about a team responding, I think that's a great example of a team responding in the right way. And then the circumstances that happened in the game, us going down twice in that game and coming back and winning, it showed a lot of grit and determination of the group. And then 3 days later, after winning a trophy, to go, you know, dismantle Costa Rica the way we did with a separate group of players was also an important step for the group. And saying, okay, we got 9 points out of that window, you know, it was successful. So to me, that was you know, that was a really good tournament. When I look at the Gold Cup, you know, it's completely different because it's over a longer period of time. And for us, it was more about dealing with adversity the entire tournament. You know, when you think about some injuries we had, some roster limitations that we had, some, you know, some lack of depth in some positions, the inexperience of the group. And that was just a really pleasurable thing to watch unfold, just how the guys came together, how they rallied around each other. And they were really single-minded in the goal of winning the Gold Cup. And, you know, nothing else mattered. The only thing that mattered to us was putting ourselves in position to win and winning the Gold Cup. And we did that. So, and then in the meantime, we got to use a number of different formations, a number of different pressing schemes. And to me, we gained a ton of information. So overall, we're happy with both of them. And I would think that the overall objective was to win, and we achieved the objective of both of those. But not only that, we gained a lot of information in the meanwhile.
Yeah, it feels like another way to put it, and I'm going to steal a line from Christian Pulisic from his appearance with DeMarcus Beasley and Gooch on their podcast, The Crack, was that when the team plays, it feels like regardless of how it's going, that you are going to find a way to win. That the players on the field, similar to what we had seen, you know, for maybe 10, 15 years with the program, that there was going to be a positive result in the end just because they were going to figure it out, just because they had the heart and determination to do it. Do you feel that from the bench as well? Is that something that the coaching staff can also feel like the players?
I think there's a tremendous desire within the group to win. And that's always helpful. But more than that, I think that, you know, we have tremendous athletes. We have tremendous, you know, fit athletes, resilient athletes. And, you know, when you couple that with the mental side of it, you know, there's this determination that that's difficult to beat. You know, I think about the Mexico game in the Gold Cup final where, you know, they were better the first half of the game. But after the first half, we just took over and we just gained this momentum that was really hard for Mexico to overcome.
Moving on to the Gold Cup. We had talked about the heroic moments in the last episode about the Nations League final, and the entire Gold Cup felt similar. That each game, each phase, there was a new standout player, maybe two or three per game. And I want to get into each of them. But first, just starting at the group stage, the wins over Haiti, Martinique, and Canada. When you look at those three games, how did they build toward the knockout rounds?
You know, it was about adapting. You know, the first goal, milestone goal, was win the first game, obviously, but then qualify for the next round and win the group. And against Haiti, you know, again, dealing with early injuries, early injury to Paul, then dealing with, you know, Reggie injury before the tournament, and then dealing with the fact that some of the starters had just played a midweek game and are coming into camp late, and then getting them on the same page, getting the whole group on the same page. and playing against a tough Haiti team. You know, I don't think they get enough credit for how physical and how difficult that team is to beat. But not giving up many chances and getting the win was important. And, you know, we really built the tension for the next game of wanting to improve and wanting to get, you know, win convincingly. And we did that. And then what happened was we set up a nice game with Canada for the, you know, for the group winners. And, you know, we know Canada had one of their stronger teams. And, you know, for us, it was about, you know, setting us on our way to reach our goals. And one of the goals was to win the group. And we had to be determined to do that. And it was an extremely hot day. And, you know, to start the game the way we did was a huge sign that we're focused and ready. And then it was about being gritty and hanging on. And I think, you know, a team needs that to grow. If you think about this, Walker Zimmerman goes out, we put in Donovan Pines and, you know, he gets to play, you know, in his second international appearance, in a meaningful game. And we played a different formation. And so it was all, I think, a really good opening, group to just get us engaged and get us ready to compete for the rest of the tournament.
When you have a player like Donovan Pines getting, as you said, just his second appearance with the full national team, you get a last word with him before he goes on. What can you as the manager say in that moment? What are the right words to say to a person stepping into that?
I think it's just about giving them confidence, you know, saying you got this, you know, very, very simple. You know, it's not about a huge instruction at that point. It's just about showing the player that you have confidence in them.
The quarterfinal against Jamaica, you won 1-0 on a late Matthew Hoppe goal. And Matthew Hoppe was someone whom the U.S. men's national team fans might not have been as familiar with coming into this tournament. But when you watch him on a field for 5 minutes, he stands out, right? His energy, his passion. It's impossible to watch him and not think, at least in my eyes, of Clint Dempsey. The way he plays, the swagger that he has every time, how much he wants the ball. And I want to know what it's like to coach a person like that, to give him his first time with the national team.
It's been fun. You know, he's got a very interesting personality, a lot of confidence, a lot of self-belief. And I think that takes him a long way. And I think, you know, it's really important. I talked to him before the tournament about what his role was going to be and that we had very little depth at the winger position. We looked to play him at winger. And, you know, it was unfortunate that, you know, he wasn't game fit. He wasn't in preseason. He stayed back in California. He wasn't training with the team. And it took him a while to get into gear. And I think in the Jamaica game is when you first really saw him, you know, normal, like to what he can play to. So that was good. I mean, it was progress at the right moment for him to get into a knockout game and be at the level that, you know, he's expecting himself to play at.
There were moments when it felt like he perhaps moved away from his positional assignment and went to get the ball and went to try and move the team into some type of flow. As a coach, for somebody like him, who you appreciate his passion, you appreciate the way he sees the game, how do you make sure that he is bringing out his full personality but still playing within the way you're asking him?
You know, I think when we work with players, for the first time, we want to get to know them as players, and we give them a lot of, you know, freedom to do what they think they should be doing. And then we learn a lot. And for him, it was, you know, seeing what he can do, seeing how he interprets it, and then fine tuning it in a way that can make him most effective, looking at exactly what his skill set is and how, you know, how we can, hone that to really help the team. So there was, you know, at times I said, do what you feel is going to be right in this situation, and we want to see it, you know. And then he starts learning his limitations. He starts learning, you know, when he's most effective and what areas are going to get him goals and assists and when he's going to be dangerous, you know. So it's all part of the process, and we as coaches have to let that process play out.
And it wasn't the Jamaica game, but I do want to ask about when he got subbed out at the end of the Qatar game. He was not happy, as most players are not, and he told you. How was that for you? How do you see that from a player? What was that like on the coach end of that?
It's, you know, I mean, I think it's all part of the game, right? And it's all part of, you know, what you deal with when there's high emotion and high tension in matches. And, you know, I think ideally you'd want everyone to handle that situation in a better way. Just like, you know, when a player makes a mistake, you know, it's not nice if the coach screams at him and belittles him, right? We don't do that. And so I think it's very similar where if a player doesn't agree with the coach's decision, I think there's a certain way to handle it. And, but again, I understand the heat and the emotion of a game, and we discussed it afterwards. And, you know, the first thing I said to him, it was, or, you know, when he apologized, I said, you know, no problem. I'm a big boy. You're a big boy. And, you know, it's been said and it's done and it's over. You know, I really appreciate your apology and let's move forward. You know, it's not, I'm not the type of person to hold a grudge or anything like that. And, you know, and that's part of a young player, and that's, you know, part of emotion of a game.
I thought it was cool that in the locker room after the final, he had on his Greg shirt with your face on it. You look great, by the way. Your face comes off great on the white tee.
Oh my goodness. That's Matthew Hoppe, man. Unbelievable.
The other person that I thought stood out, and he had stood out even in the games leading up to this, but you gave James Sands a particularly complicated task, which was defensively, he was in the middle of three center backs. And then when you were in possession, he moved into the defensive midfield role. And this is for a 21-year-old, really in his first event with the senior national team. That's a lot to put on him. How did you know that he was ready? What had you seen to give him that responsibility?
Yeah, that's where I think, you know, we watch a lot of soccer. We watch a lot of what the players are doing with their clubs. And we've seen him do that before for NYC. So we knew that it's a role that he could fulfill. You know, he plays midfield for NYCFC. You know, he plays center back sometimes. He played in three in the back. So he's done this. And now it's just about giving him the confidence that he could do it at the international level as well. And, you know, I think he handled it well. It's really, you know, interesting when, you know, our whole job in this tournament was to push guys, make them uncomfortable, get them out of their comfort zone, seeing when, you know, they could fail or seeing when they'd break or see when they'd be successful. And that was all part of the learning for us in this tournament.
One line you use often is taking in new information as a coaching staff. One important data point from this game felt like the playing surface, that it wasn't an ideal surface. And when I ask friends what they took away from the game, every single one says, what about the surfaces down in the World Cup qualifying away matches? Does that concern you? What did you learn from this experience against Jamaica on a not ideal grass surface?
Well, part of it was, you know, just acknowledging it, right? And to the team and saying, listen, the surface isn't great and deal with it. You know, that's part of it. Both teams are going to be dealing with it. We have to deal with it. We're going to be playing on worse fields than this. This is all part of what we do. You know, we respond to no matter what we're given. It could be hot weather. It could be injuries. It could be change of formation. It could be, you know, bad field, bad referee. You know, our job is to respond to it. And that's the message to the guys, not to make excuses for it, but to respond to it.
Okay. Moving to the semifinal now. Another 1-0 win. On another late goal, this time from Jossi Zardes. I want to talk about Jossi in a second, but first, we need to discuss Matt Turner, because what a performance he put in. I mean, big save after big save, and not just, Greg, big saves, but the type where you think to yourself, did that just happen? You know, that it was unreal in the moment.
You know, it's really nice when you have performances like that, because you need them, right? You need them to win tournaments. You need guys to step up and have big contributions when they're called upon. And this was there are two saves that he made in the game that were unbelievable. And, you know, they're just coming off of plays that are so strange, right? A shot from 40 yards out that gets deflected that he has to respond to. And then another shot that gets blocked and the guy, it falls right to the player who one times and he has to make an amazing save. And it's really, you know, just great when goalies step up in that way and make those game-winning saves. You know, he was man of the match afterwards, for a reason, because, we wouldn't have the chance to be successful in that game if it wasn't for him making those big plays.
Yeah, and now you've had three goalkeepers who have demonstrated what they can do for you, right? They have all shown that they can perform on this stage. So how do you take that information and what is your process to make decisions going into that first World Cup qualifying game in a month?
It's a good question. A lot of it will depend on, our comfort and what we need in that game. Some of it will depend on what type of form the player's in. Some of it will depend on what the player's done in the past. So there's a lot of different variables that will go into making that decision. But one thing's for sure is that, when you think about our goalkeeper pool, even, Brad Guzan, who's played in Nations League in big games against Canada, Sean Johnson's played in some good games in Gold Cup and some friendly games, and then you add Zach, Ethan, Bill Hamid and Matt Turner to it. The goalkeeper core is strong right now. And, that's important because as you see, you need that position to be working well, to be successful.
Yeah. After taking so much pride in it for so many years, there was a slight concern that it wasn't a strength anymore, but those concerns are gone. You have plenty of options. Moving up the field, Christian Roldan has been in the program for a while, but it seemed like the Gold Cup was a new step, that he demonstrated that he's not just a player on the team, but he is a vital player. And you chose to keep him out of the starting lineup, even through the final, but every time he came on, he was spectacular. Where is Christian's role in this team, and why did you ultimately decide to bring him off the bench instead of starting him in those final games?
I think the one thing we learned, the most about Gold Cup and to a certain extent in the Nations League, but a little bit different, was how we can use substitutes. And, we use substitutes in the Gold Cup to change the game. And it was really important. We purposely had guys in that we knew were going to come in and give us a big boost in performance when they came in. And that's why we didn't hesitate at all to start guys like Reggie Cannon or George Bello in the Gold Cup final, because we knew we had guys waiting to come in and help the team. And if you think about Nations League, when Jordan Siabatu scored against Honduras after coming in, and some of the big performances off the bench in the final, that's how you're going to win games. And for us to be able to use substitute solutions strategically, I think can only help the team. And Christian was a good example of that, where, I had a conversation with him the day before the final. I said, listen, it's almost like, as a coach, you're saying this, but you're hearing it as a player, and it sounds like such bullshit, right? I'm like, listen, you're not going to start because you're so valuable as a reserve. And I'm like, as it's coming out of my mouth, I'm just like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm saying this. But it's actually true. And, it's hard for a player to accept sometimes, but he actually accepted it and embraced his role as a guy who can come in and really help the team. And not only in the final, but all throughout the tournament, he was a key player in this role, and I'm really proud of the way he embraced it, but also the way he performed while doing it.
I have so many follow-up questions, but the first is, and I recognize this is a very personal, intimate moment, but how do players like Christian Roldan, or just professional athletes in general, respond in that moment? I mean, what is the right way to react when a coach gives you that news?
I think part of it is how part of the nuance is how I deliver the news. I think that's really important, and I have to be empathetic with how I'm delivering it. And part of it is understanding it and saying to them, listen, I know this sucks, man. I know this isn't good information to hear. We're playing a final tomorrow. Anyone who's a competitor wants to be in the starting 11, but this is our plan. And this is how we think, we're going to be successful. And thankfully, what we had in this group and what we've had in the Nations League and that group is guys that are all in it for the team. And when you have that, they're willing to accept roles like that because they know that can help make the team successful. When the team's successful, they're going to be successful.
Do you have a moment from your career where you heard that news and you remember it and you reference it when you now as the coach have these conversations?
I think more so it's the other way around. It's when I didn't hear the explanation or I didn't hear, you know, the communication. And that's what I always, I didn't have a great feeling about. So what I think about now is it may be a difficult conversation for me to have, but I owe it to the player to have that conversation because that information is going to help him. And he's not going to fill in the gaps with what he thinks the story is, right? I'm not starting because I'm not good enough. You know, I'm not starting because of this. You're not starting because we have a reason, you know, we have a way of how we're going to use you in this game that we think is going to help the team be successful and ultimately win the Gold Cup.
Yeah. Every coach who used to be a player has something they bring from their playing days. Maybe it's a way they want to run sessions. Maybe it's a way they want to play tactically. So it's interesting to hear that that was one of your things. You remember that feeling, that lack of clarity from a coach, and you want to make sure that you do better for your players. I want to take this moment to talk about super subs as well. I'll always take the bait to talk about super subs because I love that you brought it up. It seems to me like one of the big inefficiencies in soccer right now. The fact that A, coaches feel a need to start their best players at the beginning of the game when it's much more important what happens in the 96th minute than what happens in the 10th minute. But also B, that the game, a soccer game, is distinctly different in minute 80 than minute 10. To a certain extent that it might even be a different variety of sport. And that the players who are suited to that setup in the 80th minute are different than players who are suited for the setup in the 10th minute. So I always appreciate when coaches think about that distinction and allocate their players. So it's not just the 11 best or most important who are starting, but how does this group of players stretch over the 90 minutes to give us the best chance of winning?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. What I'd add to that, Bobby, is that we also look at the opponent and what the opponent has and what they can do. You know, so for example, we felt like, you know, there wasn't many options for Mexico to change in the game that was really going to help them. So they would have to stick with a lot of their guys. And as a result, their guys would be fatigued. I mean, we were playing on very short rest in the final. So that was another consideration is you know, what moves the opponent can make and can you counteract those moves?
How much do you think about that in advance? How much do you try and game out the chess match that will happen so that you make sure you, in chess parlance, move the pieces first to give yourself the advantage?
It's also a question of anticipating their moves. So we talk a lot about that leading up to the game. What are potential subs? How that's going to change your formation? What it's going to do to team shape? What exactly it's going to do to our shape? How can that person hurt our team? How can we hurt them once they do that? So we look at all of those things and we discuss all those things prior to the game.
I just want to note that I whipped out the concept of chess parlance, like I know what I'm talking about, beyond Queen's Gambit. You've watched Queen's Gambit, right?
I have. That's a great, okay. It was a great show. Say,
that's what you should add to your list.
Yeah, I got it.
The last topic on that Qatar game is Jossy Zardes. And I don't want to editorialize too much here, but throughout the rough span you had in your first year, it felt like Jossy Zardes took a lot of that force from the public perception. And he was portrayed in a certain way. But you never lost faith in him. And now you see how that gets returned. And you probably know Jossy as well as anybody in American soccer. So I just love to hear you talk about the progression and how he has pushed through that patch to be of such an important part of the success in Gold Cup.
It's his mentality. I think it's his bond with the group, his professionalism, his sacrifice for the team. You know, all those things Jossy, you know, is amazing at. You know, when you talk about a human being, a good human being, that's Jossy. And, you know, he wants clarity in what he needs to do when he's on the field. You know, that's what he thrives in, the clarity side of it. And once you give him that, you know, he performs to a high level. And, you know, he's less of an intuition player, more of a structure player. but can give you a ton of ability within that structure. And, you know, he's a guy that can make a difference. And, you know, when you have physical guys on the field, when you have a Darryl who can wear players down, you know, and then you have him who you can bring him in when, and he can execute his role perfectly. You know, it's valuable. And with Jossie, you know, we have a strong relationship, but it's also a lot down to what he brings to the table. And it's just complete predictability, complete professionalism, and a desire to win.
A nuance that he does really well is that part of your defensive structure is to have, you ask a lot of that center striker, right? Maybe go press a third center back, maybe track the defensive midfielder. And it is really hard to track a player behind you like you were asking of that center striker, because that person is in your blind spots and they're actively trying to find your blind spots. So you have to check over your shoulder every second while making sure that you're still in the passing lane from the ball. And it's so hard, and he does it so well.
He does. You know, it's something that we worked hard on in Columbus with the Amoeba, and now in a 4-3-3, it's important that striker holds the middle. And, you know, he does a good job of knowing how to do that and executing.
Time to talk about the final now. Another victory over Mexico, 1-0 on the header and extra time from Miles Robinson. And it feels like we can only talk about this victory in the Nations League final victory over Mexico if we look back 2 years to the defeat at MetLife Stadium. It felt to me like at that point you had a big mountain to climb. And going from that game to now these two victories and the momentum into World Cup qualifying, how do you remember that experience against Mexico?
So, you know, I think internally we are very, very comfortable with the game plan, very comfortable with the strategy, of gaining information and really understanding how Mexico is going to press, how we're going to try to break the press, what that's going to do, what spaces that's going to open up, how we can, you know, hurt their back line. And overall gaining more information about our opponent. But from an outside perspective, you know, it hurt the team. You know, it hurt the team, people's faith in the team. It got people upset. It got people questioning what we can do, if we're doing the right thing. And it's difficult to deal with. You know, I got to be honest. It's not easy, you know, for the players to deal with it. It's not easy for the coaches to deal with it. It's not easy for the staff to deal with it, because you want the public on your side. You know, it's, you know, we're doing this for our country. You know, that's the beauty of what we're doing. And you want your country to be behind you. And when they're not behind you, it's upsetting, you know? But part of this process and part of our learning is failure is not an option. You know, we don't look at it necessarily as failure, we look at it as an opportunity to learn. And that information, it was absolutely vital to us winning these next two games. If we didn't do that, you know, we wouldn't be in the place we were now.
Returning to the now then, the 1-0 victory most recently in the Gold Cup final, a key protagonist in both this win and the win in Nations League was Kellen Acosta. And I use the word protagonist because Kellen has been more than just an excellent player. He has been, I don't even know the word to use, but it has been more than just about someone who gets on the ball. And you think specifically about what he did before the penalty kick in the Nations League, even before what we did before the penalty kick against Qatar. And we spoke in the first episode about his rise through your program. And now he seems to be someone that if you had to pick a squad, he has to be on it because of the different things he can do for you.
Yeah. You know, Kellen is an example of a guy that competes, and we know what games against Mexico are going to look like. When we're playing the way we want to play against Mexico, it's going to be a high rhythm game. And you need players that are comfortable competing in that game. You know, an example, you know, is, you know, the training before the game, you know, looked completely different than a normal training session. You know, it's really small spaces, really a lot of duels, really no time on the ball, because that's what it's going to look like when you're playing against Mexico. And you need players that can deal with that and thrive in that. And Kellen's an example of a guy that does a really good job in that type of game. And, you know, to be successful, you need more guys on the field that are comfortable playing that.
You could probably tell the story, if you had to pick a single storyline, you could talk about the story arc of Greg Berhalter's national team, perhaps through that number six position, that defensive midfielder, and the way that that role has evolved in your team. Maybe from the word you used to use was a control player, and Kellen can do a lot of things well. Maybe one of the most complete players the program has seen, but maybe control is not the first word that comes to mind. How do you think about that arc? Is it fair to say that it's changed, or in your mind, has it actually been pretty consistent?
No, I mean, I think it has changed. I think that's a great point. But there, you know, there's still this balance between what, you know, not every team is Mexico, right? And in a lot of games, you're going to want a controlling player in that position. You know, for those games that it demands another type of profile, you know, then it's great to have, you know, a player who can do that. So for us, it's just understanding the disparity of opponents and what they bring to each and every game. And then setting the team up that we can take advantage of, you know, of who we're playing with that position, because that is a key position to what we do.
Yeah, it really is. And then behind that defensive midfielder, in Gold Cup at least, and I suspect moving forward at some point as well, Miles Robinson scored the goal in extra time, a gorgeous header, but had a strong tournament overall. And this was really his coming out party for the team. And among those center backs, I'm not going to try and pretend like I know what your depth chart is, but it feels like he really cemented the fact that he has something to offer, particularly with his defensive ability to shut down opposing attacks.
Yeah, you know, Hector Herrera got player of the tournament, and I thought it easily could have been Miles Robinson. You know, he scored two goals. You know, we gave up one goal the whole tournament, which is a penalty kick. You know, five shutouts, 4-1-0 wins in a row, you know, 5-1-0 wins of the tournament. I mean, I think that's, you know, it says a lot about the pressure the defense had to play under. And, you know, in my opinion, that would have been a good choice for player of the tournament. But, you know, for Miles, it was about understanding what these games are like, understanding how he's going to have to compete, understanding that you need to put every single thing into every single play of the game. And him learning that, and he really embraced that and took that on and adapted his play for the tournament. And, you know, really proud of his performance in there, because, you know, when Walker goes down, you know, you're a little bit shorthanded and, you know, playing James in a four, you know, he hasn't done that in a while, you know, that was, and Miles, you know, was able to adapt and lead and do a good job.
With your experience as a center back who has played in a World Cup, what do you offer something like Miles Robinson? Do you take him under your wing a little bit more because you're specifically familiar with his position and his experience?
The other part of it though is we ask that, you know, we demand that the center backs want to have the ball, want to do good things with the ball, want to open up and need to open up and, you know, that's really important. So we're very demanding of our center backs and need to be able to defend space behind them and need to push the line up. And I think the most important thing for, you know, that you can tell a player like Miles is it's about the mentality, you know, and it's about being a killer on every single play. And when you see top center backs around the world, you know, when you think of Sergio Ramos, you know, that's what comes to mind is the absolute will to win every single duel that he's in.
Before we end the conversation on Gold Cup, I do want to back up a second because it feels important to talk about how to contextualize the concept of grit. Because we've talked about the excellent individual performances and we have talked about the emotional perseverance that your team showed. But there can be a second side to that coin that you need the individual performances and the grit because the team performance didn't speak for itself. So as the coach, how do you think about that balance of the quality of the performances versus the ability to step up, show grit, find the result?
I think it depends what you're measuring. You know, if you think about a final, and our expected goals was 1.83 in a final, that's high. That's a high number. You know, when you look at Italy versus England, you know, the expected goals was like 0.3 or 0.4. 2 for Italy, 0.3 for England, playing at home. You know, so for me, to be successful at the international level, you need both. You need your game plan to be working, and you need the perseverance, you need the grit, you need the mentality. And for us, when I look at how many turnovers we had and how many times we turned Mexico over in their own half, how many times we turned them over in their defensive third, you know, that's a hallmark of, to me, a team that's doing things well.
That you have a few of your, in business terms, KPIs on the field. Yeah. And if you hit those KPIs, if you hit those pieces, then you feel good about it.
Absolutely.
Looking ahead to World Cup qualifying. It's time. It's here. 14 games in total. You start in less than a month with 3 games. El Salvador away on September 2nd, Canada home in Nashville September 5th, and Honduras away on September 8th. We need to talk about the schedule, and I know you have talked about it 1,000 times, that you have tried to replicate the cadence of the games. But, and Greg, I've heard this over and over. And then I look at the schedule again in preparation for this, and it is brutal. So internally, inside the room with the team as the leader, when you go into something that is just objectively, obviously that hard, what's the tone you take? Do you lean into the challenge? Do you talk around it? How do you approach that as a leader?
No, we embrace it. We embrace the challenge. We embrace the struggle. You know, these things make us better, make us stronger. You know, one thing I could tell you, Bobby, is that every team's going through the same thing, right? So it's just about who can handle it the best. And that's why, you know, it was really important for us to see the whole player pool in this summer. Really important for us. You know, the guys understand what it's going to be like. They understand it's going to be a collective effort. They understand it's not going to be 11 players, you know, pushing us through all 3 games. We're going to need a team spirit. We're going to need resiliency. We're going to need, you know, a number of different players we're going to be using. We're going to be mixing, matching lineups. Some guys are going to be starting and then not starting. I mean, this is all part of it. And the guys, you know, have had that experience in these last 2 months and, you know, we'll be prepared. And, you know, the challenge of it, the grueling nature of it, I think we'll be well prepared for. And I think it's something that we'll be relishing.
How much can you try and predict what will happen and prepare for it?
In what sense? Predict
lineups, injuries, travel problems. I mean, you've been through this as a player, but how much can you? I always want to know from someone who has to make hard decisions how much you prepare versus how much you want to give yourself the freedom to follow your instinct and figure it out in the moment.
Well, there's a lot of adapting you need to do. I think you have a plan. And you're working on a better plan. So we have an idea of what our best 11 is going to look like and what our, you know, potentially what the whole squad can look like. But, you know, I can guarantee you, you know, we're having this conversation on August 10th. I can guarantee you by the time we get into camp, there's going to be 2 or 3 players that can't come for some reason. And we're going to have to adapt. And that's just part of it. So, you know, for us, it's, you know, we can't preach one thing, right? We can't say it's about the collective and it's about the whole squad if we don't put it into practice also. And we've shown that, you know, we're willing to do that with the different squads we've played, the different players we played, the different personnel, the substituting pattern, all that stuff. We know it's going to be about the collective.
And you have the benefit having gone through this as a player. Do you have any specific experiences that you had that you can tap into now? Or just more generally, how do you use that experience when communicating with your players now?
Well, I think a good story is in the preliminary round. You know, we go to Costa Rica, and you know, we're tied late in the game. They called a penalty. They called it on me, actually, right? Which was I headed it, and they called a handball and gave a penalty in the 90-something minute. It would have been the first time we got a result down in Costa Rica, and it turns into a loss. And after the game, you know, Claudio and Bruce go nuts, and they both get suspended for 3 games. And now we're behind the eight ball. We have 1 point after 2 games, and we have 4 games to go. You know, the 6 games total, and we have to get through the group. And we're, you know, in third place in the group, and only the first place or top two go. So for us, it was, you know, it was adapting, man. You know, you lost your captain, you lost your coach for a couple games, and it's how do you still be successful? How do you still carry on? And so what I've learned is that, you know, you need to adapt, you need to count on the squad, and you need to be prepared for really, really intense games. You know, every game is a do or die game. Every game is a final, basically.
When you had that as a player, how much of that concept of every game is do or die, every game is a final, I'm sure it makes you feel a certain way and it makes everyone feel differently. Maybe be excitement, responsibility, a little bit of fear. Has that feeling, whatever it is, you don't even have to say what it is, but has the feeling changed for you from player now to coach? Or is it the same?
No, well, I think the general feeling is very similar, but the difference is, as a player, you're specifically focused, you know, on preparing yourself to perform at a high level in that game. And as a coach, you know, you're preparing everyone to perform at a high level in that game. And it's a different responsibility.
So we're here, right? This is basically it. Gold Cup was amazing. Nations League was amazing. But now that you're into this stretch run, what does your next month look like? And the specific question is, what are the key checkpoints? When will you have the squad picked? When will you let players know? What do those final preparations look like?
So we have our prelim squad already picked out, and clubs will get notified in a couple of days. And, you know, we'll start finalizing the opponent scouting reports. We'll start finalizing those, you know, getting specific on who we're going to need, what type of profiles, what type of game plan we're going to set up for these games, and then start talking about what the teams could potentially look like in terms of in each game and the rest and the travel and all that stuff. We'll start finalizing. But it's a lot, but it's also really exciting because it's uncharted territory, right? We've never gone through, you know, 3 games in a 7-day period with this amount of travel, with these weather conditions. So it's going to be fun.
I imagine there's also this feeling in life when you wait for something for so long, a vacation, a wedding, whatever it is, and then it shows up and you're just like, oh, wow, I'm here. This is the moment that I've been waiting for. And then you go through it, and that's what you're in right now.
Yeah, exactly. September 3rd is going to come be right around the corner.
Ending the soccer conversation on this point. 2 episodes ago, I asked you for your message to the fans as the team returned to competitive action. So now as the team returns to World Cup qualifying, which is a memory that means a lot to the fans, right? It's an impactful memory in our minds. What is your message now?
Now it's just about the importance of our home games, the importance of each and every moment we have to create an atmosphere in the stadiums. You know, we select these venues for a reason, right? That, you know, they're going to be pro-American crowds. They're going to be intense environments. They're going to be difficult environments for the opponents to play in. And we need this more than ever, you know? So now is the time, I think, to get on board, get behind the team and really help create this atmosphere that we're famous for.
Now, for the last segment, just a few minutes on you, Greg. I enjoy these. I hope you enjoy these because I think, at least I do, and the listeners enjoy getting to know you more. So just on a very personal topic, we talked about the Mexico game and everything about the program has had doubters for the last few years, including you. Mm-hmm. And this is, I quip about it, but I don't want it to be a confrontational question. I truly just enjoy hearing how people with their backs against the wall push forward and make the way out and the way it feels on the other end. And you are not all the way, but partially on the other end. So how does it feel to have pushed through that personally?
I really don't look at it like that. I look at it as we're on a journey, and our journey is to create a successful team. Our journey is to change the way the world views American soccer, and we're not there yet. And like any journey, right, there's going to be difficult times in the journey. There's going to be hills in the road. There's going to be bumps in the road. There's going to be potholes in the road. You may get a flat tire here and then. You may run out of gas. But it's just about how you fill back up, how you fix the tire, and you keep going. And so, you know, I don't look at it as, you know, this summer was redemption for the program. It's not that at all. To me, it's honestly about this journey. And, you know, we're continuing on this pathway, but we're not there yet.
I don't know what I expected from that answer, even though I wrote it, but that's a fair answer and a good answer. I don't know. Maybe I was wanting some New Jersey FUs in there, but I didn't get them. I don't know how to follow up that question and response. what's something that you are really good at, but does not pertain to sports at all?
Cooking. I thought we talked about that already. Yeah. And mixologist. I'm really good at making cocktails and really good at cooking.
Okay. Well, we'll say that Leo Messi is coming to your house and saying, Greg, if you give me the right dinner, I will play a few years in the U.S. What do you cook for the Messi family?
So because he's Argentinian, I'm going to have to make him some steak. And I'm going to go. We have a bodega right down the street that makes great chimichurri. So I'll buy the chimichurri. I'll fire up the green egg. I'll reverse sear a tomahawk and slice it up for him. Maybe a side of gratinated potatoes, a nice salad, maybe Caesar salad, homemade croutons, and serve it with nice red wine.
Nice. Is there a preferred red wine?
I'm more of like a Cabernet guy, but I like it more. I like it more with more tannins. I like it a little bit more, less refined, a little bit of a bite to it.
Nice. I get, is this I can envision your coaching staff that when you're tired of talking about soccer on those plane rides home, this is what you talk about. How about what podcast do you listen to? You a podcast? Do you listen to podcasts?
Very, very rarely. I listen to a couple Adam Grant podcasts. I enjoy that. I'm not a podcast. I'm more of a reader.
Yeah.
I like reading books.
So when you're in the car, what do? You listen to music?
I'm never in the car. I live in the city, man. I walk everywhere.
Nice. Have you always been a city person? Like you've never become a burbs dad?
Well, in Chicago, I lived in the suburbs. In Columbus, I lived in the suburbs. But ever since we've been in Chicago, in Stockholm, we're in the city. And in where else? Rotterdam, we're in the city. So we're city people. Yeah.
So no podcasts. Okay. How about books?
No. You need to send me some.
Oh, I love send me some podcasts.
Yeah.
How about books? You gave the recommendation, Adam Grant's Think Again. I read it. I'm appreciative of it. I talked to friends about it, asked them to read it. So what's next? What else has been on your list lately?
Read this book, Living with a Seal by Jesse Izzard. It's an interesting book. He actually asked David Goggins to come live with him and train him.
I had never heard of David Goggins until 24 hours ago. I listened to him on the Rich Roll podcast.
Yeah.
You probably don't know what the Rich Roll podcast is, but Goggins.
I don't.
David Goggins is a former Navy SEAL who's done a bunch of ultra endurance races. Somebody who's really passionate about the power of the mind to push through pain.
Yes.
Okay. So you read a book by David Goggins or?
No, it's Jesse Izzard is his name. He's owner of the Atlanta Hawks, and he started Marquee Jets, and then Itzler. Fascinating guy though. Yeah. He was a rapper from Roslyn, Long Island. And he was telling this story how he had this one song that came out and there was a magazine in the airport. He's flying. This was in the '80s. You remember the song, the Knicks song, "Go New York, Go New York, Go"?
Yeah, of course.
He wrote that song.
Okay, that's something.
Yeah, and then he had this other song, and he performed it on MTV show, and he started getting some notoriety for it, and he was in the airport, and he was on the cover of Rap Attack magazine or some magazine, and he's so psyched, and he bought the magazine, and it had his picture, and it said his name, and said, "What's wrong with rap?" So his career ended, and he ended up, going from couch to couch, sleeping on people's couch. He ended up starting Marquee Jets, and he ended up selling it to Berkshire Hathaway for a ton of money. Then he bought Zico, or invested in Zico coconut water, and made a bunch of money, and ended up buying the Atlanta Hawks. But he invited David Goggins into his house to live for 30 days, and he's talking about that, the training and the just the mental side of it. It's a good book.
Nice.
It's a fun book.
So the whole book,
it's a good read.
It's about these 30 days.
Each day. It's about each day. Yeah.
Fan, I love that.
I'm
going to pick that up next.
Yeah. Living with a Seal.
Nice. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts?
No, I guess the only thing I'd say is that, when I look back at the summer, the thing I'm most proud of is just the players and the mental side of it, and how they came together, how they bonded, how they, just continued to perform, in both the Nations League and the Gold Cup, because it took a big effort to get both those trophies.
Good luck in World Cup qualifying.
Thanks, man.